This is your Polycast for Wednesday, November 30th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, a dust-up over Civil War art at the Capitol, and Tim Walz on post-election Democratic leadership. A state government panel declared its support Tuesday for Civil War art inside the newly renovated Minnesota Capitol, but not before Governor Mark Dayton stormed out of the meeting in a huff. Dayton accused Republicans of distorting his position on relocating the paintings for political gain. Tim Pugmire reports.
On a divided voice vote, the Capitol Preservation Commission passed a motion stating its preference that six historic paintings depicting Civil War battles remain in the governor's reception room and anteroom. Governor Dayton recently suggested that those paintings should be replaced with more welcoming art that represents the full complexion of state history. But before the scheduled committee discussion of the paintings could get underway, Dayton lashed out at Republican Representative Matt Dean of Delwood for organizing opposition to an art relocation. With veterans and Civil War reenactors looking on, Dayton accused Dean of turning partisan a five-year effort to renovate the Capitol.
You haven't lifted a little finger for this project in all that time, and now you come in and you want to grandstand on it and distort the issue. All these people lined up who think this is about where do we stand on Minnesota's military, et cetera. And, you know, you hijack the operation of this commission for your own political purposes, for your own 2018 campaign purposes, and I'm not going to be a part of it.
Before storming out, Dayton said he would resign as commission chair if there are any more similar partisan episodes. Dean, who's been mentioned as a possible 2018 candidate for governor, said he appreciates Dayton's passion on the Capitol art issue, but Dean stressed that he firmly believes the Civil War paintings should remain in their intended locations. He said the Capitol is a Civil War veterans memorial.
Somebody asked me where the Civil War memorial is on the Capitol Mall, and I said, you're looking at it. It's the building. And I think it's important that if we don't stand up for that, who else will?
Republican House Speaker Kurt Dowd also spoke against relocating the Civil War paintings. Dowd of Zimmerman said moving the historic art would be an absolute tragedy.
It's very important to me, and I think the legislature probably would not appropriate money for this project had they known that we were going to be removing part of the history of the Capitol.
The Minnesota Historical Society has the final say on all Capitol art. It has already decided to move some paintings depicting Native Americans that critics say are inaccurate and offensive. But it hasn't made a final decision on the Civil War paintings. Dayton said in a late afternoon news conference that he won't try to influence the society and will accept its ultimate decision. The cooled-down governor also said he stands by the statement he was trying to make by walking out of the commission meeting.
I think the question is, do you put all the Civil War back in there and nothing else? Or do you consider what do you want to do to broaden the representation of Minnesota to all sorts of visitors?
Dayton described the dust-up over Capitol art as a forerunner of the 2017 legislative session, when the House and Senate will be controlled by Republicans and the state budget, transportation, and health care will be major issues. Covering politics, I'm Tim Pugmire, Minnesota Public Radio News.
We're still only 3 weeks past this year's exhausting and expensive election, but legislative caucuses are already rebuilding their campaign accounts for 2018. State House Republicans have a high-dollar fundraiser tonight in St. Paul, and there's another way money is filtered into competitive legislative races, through low-profile but increasingly potent party accounts in the home districts of top lawmakers. Brian Baxt has the story.
Republican Kurt Dowd's rise in St. Paul has been swift. From rookie lawmaker in 2011 to House Minority Leader 2 years later, and now the House Speaker. His climb has also been good for the Isanti County Republican Party. The year Dowd came in, his local party raised and spent just under $800, and all of its spending activity was, well, local. Fast forward to 2014, and the Isanti County Republican Party had more than $20,000 to work with, thanks to major donors and capital lobbyists, and those dollars were shipped to House races around the state. the hall more than doubled this year to almost 50,000, meeting more checks to more candidates in more places.
So it's a flow-in, flow-out kind of concept.
That's John Staton, the longtime county party treasurer. He downplayed the party's expanded donor base.
We have such amount of money in our bank account, right? We have fulfilled the requirements for our own area, and therefore we have funds that we can give to other party candidates. And we basically do as we can.
He stresses that a four-member board decides what to do with the money, not Doubt. Doubt agrees the arrangement has its limitations.
If I help them raise some money, they help candidates who need it around the state. And of course, I don't get to tell them where to spend the money, but they do a nice job of helping candidates all over the state.
At the federal level, separate accounts are commonly established and run by lawmakers to assist like-minded candidates and to build goodwill at the same time. But so-called leadership PACs are barred by state law. There's an exception, however, that allows candidates to be involved in activities of party units. And here's another wrinkle. Candidates face limits on how much they can take from lobbyists and PACs, but the rules are looser for party units. Some of those donors contribute directly to candidates and to the local parties who help the same candidates, but the extra layer expands their giving power. It's a problem to George Beck, the former chairman of the state's campaign finance board and the current head of Minnesota Citizens for Clean Elections. Beck is disturbed by how much money has become untraceable and how other dollars are passed along so many times that the initial source gets blurred.
You can't really tell what's going on, and it's just too easy to circumvent contribution limits in that way.
It's happening in both parties. The 3rd Senate District DFL has had little trouble raising money. It's home to Senator Tom Bach, who was minority leader before becoming majority leader in 2013, but who will be minority leader again next year. He makes no secret about ginning up donations for the local fund through an annual golf event and other ways.
There are members, especially incumbent members that have been around a long time, who have a lot of fundraising capacity. And when you reach the point where you can't take any additional money, oftentimes people will say, well, can you give it to my Senate district or can you give it to my county unit?
The local DFL accounts donor list is a who's who of lobbyists and political action committees. Some of the money stays with local candidates, but a lot of it gets mailed off to campaigns far from northeastern Minnesota.
But do you have any say as a member as to where that money goes?
No.
And Bach says neither do donors.
Well, it's against the law for anybody to earmark money when you give money.
One local party that had mastered the pass-through game was the 52nd Senate District DFL in Dakota County. For a time, it was home to the Commerce Committee chairman for the House and Senate. Lobbyists and groups with issues before the panels fed the party coffers. Both powerful lawmakers declared earlier this year they wouldn't be back at the Capitol next year. The local party's already feeling their absence, with a 2016 balance sheet showing a precipitous fall-off in donations. Covering politics, I'm Brian Baxt, Minnesota Public Radio News.
In Washington, House Democrats will choose their leadership today. After another disappointing election, Nancy Pelosi of California faces a challenge from Tim Ryan of Ohio. 4 of Minnesota's 5 Democratic members of Congress say they will back Pelosi. The exception is 1st District Democrat Tim Walz.
I'm going to back Tim Ryan. I just think that Democrats obviously need a change. It's probably the most obvious statement that might be made. We're simply not resonating with the folks who we should be, folks who I believe can benefit best by our policies, folks who for years understood that we stood by working people. We stood by those things that made strong communities and invested in rural communities. And they spoke with their votes loudly that they didn't feel like they could trust Democratic candidates from the top of the ticket on down. And I think I've known Tim. I think he's speaking for a frustration that's pent up in many of us, I think especially in, upper Midwest, rural areas where, I'm the rarest of the rare, a rural Democrat. There's only a handful of us left in the nation. And we can't just be, again, it's not about just winning elections. It's that I think we have to do this to make sure that the policies that are going to help people are able to get through. If we continue to lose elections and people don't want to see Medicare privatized to the point where that guarantee is taken away. The only way we can ensure that is by making sure we're winning elections, and we need to be out there with a message that does resonate with people. And I think it's hard when we're perceived as a coastal party or an urban party alone. I would argue that our policies of whether it be Social Security guarantees, Medicare, whether it be jobs and the ability to earn a living wage and pension protections, those are things that that matter as much in rural America as urban. So I'm gonna stand, I think, on the voice of change as I've always been. I'll stand up to that. I didn't come here as part of a party apparatus. I came here as part of a grassroots organization that wanted to see things done differently in Washington, and I still want to see that.
How about the DNC? Have you endorsed anybody there?
I have not. I've spoken with several, and of course, I've obviously spoken with my colleague, Congressman Ellison. I don't have a vote in that election, so you know whether I think Keith's voice certainly understands Minnesota and the Midwest well. I don't really have the interest, if you would, at the DNC and having that vote, but I think it's important whoever gets in there does have a broader view, and I make no bones about it that I think from the White House on down, both on a policy side and a political side, rural America has not been listened to in the same way. And it's not that the only real Americans live in rural America. It's not that simplified debate. It's that the issues that impact us are different, and rural America has not just failed urban area. We didn't set out in Mankato to be Chicago. We set out to be Mankato, as did Worthington, as did Adrian, and as did Le Sueur and those places. And that means there's a different set of interests. And I think for too long, we've not listened to that in a way that the way we talk about policy resonates with those folks.
I was pretty surprised watching the results come in on election night, how close your race was. Were you surprised by that?
Not really. I thought, you know, you always think it'll be a little bit more, but I think we were preparing, as we always do, that it's a close race. As I've always said, only half jokingly, that a dead person with an R behind their name will do 45% in the first district. That's just the way things work there. It is a historically more moderate to right-leaning district. It was very obvious to me that Hillary Clinton was not doing well when the top of the ticket runs at 38%. There's only, again, a handful of people who were able to survive that type of there's no coattail there. There's an anchor. And I understand clearly that, right at half the people did not vote for me. And many of them, as I understand, too, they voted for my opponent even if they wouldn't know him, just because it wasn't what they considered to be the establishment. And I'm with them on this. The irony of this is that the folks who say Washington is broken, I'm the lead. You know, I'm leading the chorus on that. Of course it is. We can't move anything. We have continuing resolutions instead of doing budgets. We have government shutdowns. Those are the things that are driving people nuts. And when you're here, I understand it's your responsibility to change it. I think the reason we were able to prevail, and it's one of the things that I'm a little frustrated with our leadership, the question they should be asking me is how we won. And I think we won with a bipartisan message of effectiveness, of working for jobs, and not being a partisan fire bomber, that the call is that we don't have to demonize Republicans to get elected in rural areas. We have to tell them what we stand for. And I've yet to have anybody in leadership spend any amount of time asking, how are you able to overcome an incredible wave against you where we lost state senators? You know, Secretary Clinton was wiped out in historic number for that district, and we still are there. And so we expected it to be close. We didn't, I don't think, expected the bottom to fall out of the Clinton campaign as much as it did nationally, and no more so and then in the first district. But I'm gratified that the people of the first district against that wave went with me, and they understand that I'm going to provide that independent voice I always have. I'm going to do it in a way that's respectful, and I'm going to get results and actually move some legislation.
Well, Congressman, I know we're out of time. Thanks so much. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Take care.
That's DFL Congressman Tim Walz. Walz defeated his Republican opponent, Jim Hagedorn, by less than one percentage point, or a little more than 2,500 votes. And that's your Polycast for this Wednesday, the last Wednesday of November. Your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom.